Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event. Fight fans worldwide, you've tuned into the number one undisputed boxing podcast today. This is the Boxing Breakdown. Now, your heavy-handed, hard-hitting host, Mark Roxy.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. What's up, everybody? And welcome to the Boxing Breakdown. This is your host, Mark Roxy, and listen, I am super stoked again this week. Boxing is heating up. The news is tremendous. I can't even keep up with everything that's going on in the boxing world. It's crazy. We're still, you know, not back to boxing fully, but boy, people are talking it up. The chat rooms and the rhetoric is out of control, people. It's crazy. So, you know, you got all kinds of news. Errol Spence, you know, he says he's got like three more fights at 147 before he goes up to 154. Huh. Very interesting. 154 is loaded. There's tons of stuff up at 154. So I find that to be an interesting statement, and the plot thickens. You got Keith Thurman up there talking to Manny Pacquiao that, you know, he wants a rematch. Everybody wants that Manny Pacquiao, right? So Pacquiao can win his ninth division title against Triple G. You got Errol Spence Jr. To fight Danny Garcia in a comeback fight. My goodness, it's crazy. Freddie Roach comes out and says that Pacquiao might want Golovkin. Crawford versus Pacquiao, possible in Bahrain in 2020. Right? Manny Pacquiao's reacting to Floyd Mayweather calling him out, saying he's an old man. And then, of course, you've got Danny Swift Garcia. He's confirming that he's going to be fighting either Manny Pacquiao or Spence. I don't know what to believe. It's crazy, the news. Javonte Davis warns Ryan Garcia that he'll pretty much slap him. So that's an interesting comment to make. You got Anthony Joshua, who's injured. He needs 4 to 6 weeks more of rest before he can really get back to boxing. It's just, the news is crazy, but I'm super excited. Hopefully I updated you a little bit on where we are. And, again, welcome to the Boxing Breakdown. So today I have a great show for you because I've got an amazing judge, official for professional boxing. His name is Harold Hunt. And then, we're going to break down. Harold and I are going to talk about what it's like to be a judge, how the boxing profession works. For those of you that aren't 100% sure, I'm sure it'll be educational for you. And we're also going to chop up the Teofimo Lopez fight against Vasily Lomachenko. These are two amazing fighters. And to be super frank with you, I believe it's probably the fight to see. It's the number one fight that's out there. So I'm super excited about that. And so let me just get my guest in here today, and I'll just tell you a little bit about Harold Hunt. First and foremost, he's a lifelong and impassioned person and boxing fan. He's been a professional judge with the IBF and various state commissions since 2015. Prior to Harold becoming a judge, he was an inspector for his home LBC commission in Georgia. As a professional boxing judge, Harold has participated in over 200 plus fights, including title fights. He's appeared on a number of minor television fight cards as well as major fight cards. Harold fell in love with boxing during the Ali Frazier one, particularly the media buildup leading up to the 1971 clash. When Muhammad Ali lost, Harold recalls that he cried. Back then, boxing was on television on Friday and Saturday nights. Millions of people tuned in. During his earlier years, Harold began to appreciate the business side of boxing, as it was and is totally unregulated and operates by its own rules. Throughout the years, Harold studied boxing as if he was in school. He studied legends like John L. Sullivan and Sugar Ray Robinson, current superstars like Devin Haney, Teofimo Lopez, and Vasily Lomachenko. Harold has studied them all. As an adult, Harold's passion for boxing has no limits. He was known for throwing full-out boxing parties, where he would get his friends and their wives to participate by teaching them how to score a professional boxing match. And reportedly, they fell in love. They loved boxing after they spent a little time with Harold. At one of those parties, Harold made a choice about his involvement in boxing. Why should I just be a spectator when I could roll up my sleeves and participate? So Harold did exactly that. He basically went and got his Association of Boxing Commission license and began working with some of the same people that he had been watching all those years. Boxing to Harold is beautiful and ugly, orderly and chaotic, lawful and corrupt, forgiving and unforgiving, all at the same time. While he is responsible for accurately scoring a match as it occurs, what Harold prides himself most in is helping others to basically enjoy the magnificent sport of boxing. That's really what he wanted to say. It's my distinct privilege to have the talented, skillful, and always in-depth analyst of the sport of boxing here with me today, Mr. Harold Hunt, professional boxing judge. Welcome. What's up? What's up? What's up? Let's go. Come on in, Harold.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, thank you for the intro. I was like, who's that guy? I wanted to talk to him.
Yep, I got to make sure I do you justice, man. You are tried and true. You are an amazing person, and really, it's just my honor to have you here with us today, man. It's a pleasure, and I'm so exhilarated by the idea that you and I could talk a little bit about, you know, your entrance into boxing and how you became a judge, and also break down the fight, you know, break down this Teofimo Lopez who Vasily Lomachenko fight, man. That is my hands are sweaty. That is the, I cannot wait until that kicks off.
Okay.
So tell me, Harold. So like, what made you fall in love with boxing? I mean, how did it happen what was it about boxing that you fell in love with?
My mother had the encyclopedias. And at the time, the encyclopedias had, you know, A, B, C, D. It was B, boxing. And I would open them up, and I would look at the boxing. At that time, it had boxing from A to Ali. He was the champion at the time.
Right.
And it really laid out what it was, where it came from, all of that. And I was pretty young, you know, and I just was reading that because there was no internet, there was no cable, nothing. It was, when you open encyclopedias, it was like taking you around the world.
Right.
So anyway, I read that and I started liking boxing. I didn't really sink in until, as you said, when the hype about the Ali fight. Now, there was no social media, but we had, you know, the magazines in the house with Ali and Frazier on the cover. And at my church, the men at the church were talking about the fight. And at my school, people were talking about the fight before it even happened. And I was just sucking it all in. And half the bus was pro Frazier, half the bus was pro Ali. And this was, you know, this was then. So I was just in it, just taken.
Wow.
Then we watched the fight, we listened to the fight on a radio in the kitchen. It wasn't the actual sound of the crowd, it was a commentator talking to another commentator who told us what was going on. We didn't hear any crowd or anything. He just relayed what he was told. So there was no crowd noise, no hollering, nothing. And I was so just mesmerized by that. After that, I just followed everything I could. And then ABC, NBC started showing all the fights. I mean, they always were, but I never really paid attention. And I started watch boxing. It just was all of my situation. And I just really enjoyed the fact that you got to go in and prevail on your own. And that's what I enjoyed the most. I think I boxed a little bit at sixth grade.
Wow.
I didn't box. I went to a gym somewhere and I punched a guy and he fell down. And I was like, okay, that's pretty cool. Then I got in the ring with another guy who I knew had amateur experience, and I could see him setting me up to knock me out. I threw the gloves right off my hands. I was like, nope, I am not going to get knocked out. But I enjoyed everything about boxing,
right?
You know, the promoters and the people, and I just really enjoyed it. So from there, I just got into it, and that was basically my story. And you read my story, how I just all of a sudden I decided I wanted to do that. So that's why I got into it. I always enjoyed it. And I grew up in Denver, Colorado. And on Sundays, we would get this grainy footage of Mexican fighters from Mexico at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon on UFH. And it was black and white. You couldn't understand the language, but those guys would fight. And I would go to church, talk to God, and then I would come home and I would watch those fights. And that was year after year after year. So that's how I really got into it. And it's been a huge part of my life since then.
Wow. You know, it's funny. You just kind of threw me way back to when I was a child. And my grandfather used to have a black and white set-top box, a little television in Puerto Rico. And we would just sit there. I'd sit on his lap and we would watch fight after fight after fight, just like you just mentioned. And you just really threw me back there. So I can definitely relate to that. So how did you become a judge? Like, where does that come from?
There was a fight at the World Congress Center and I got my ticket after I left work and I went down there and I got in. And I was walking down there, and I noticed that one of the judges was my kid's classmate's mother.
Okay.
She was a tall, statuesque woman, about maybe 6'4", and she was a judge. And she said, oh, I remember you from the class. Come sit next to me at the ring.
Wow.
Now, I had been to a couple fights in Atlanta, just, you know, in the crowd, because I enjoyed it, but I really never step forward. She let me sit at the ring her, and it was turned that light on.
Wow.
Other than the party. So at that time, that was it. I immediately went and got the ABC license like the next month. I had stayed down there 2 days. I studied. My brother-in-law drove me down there, stayed in a hotel with me while I studied. It was just surreal. And I remember in the classroom, in the middle of the day, and we were talking about boxing, showing boxing on the wall, I mean, on the screen. And I was like, I cannot believe I am in during the day, we are talking and contemplating boxing. And the referee was teaching my class, so I had watched on television. And things of that nature was just so unbelievable to me. And at that point, I knew they would have to take me away from the ring dead. He died at the boxing ring. We're going to cart him out, take him to the morgue. But this is where we found him, because that's how much I enjoy that sport.
Wow. That's really inspiring. I mean, that is an amazing story. And So in all the years that you've been judging, how many matches have you actually judged?
Well, it's 200 plus. So
wow.
I would say 211, 212, somewhere in there. And I'm actually a pretty young judge. Some of those guys have been doing it a lot longer than I have.
Oh yeah. Sure.
However, I was able to kind of do some title fights very early in my career, WBC fight and some of the prominent fights. So that was a plus for me to really get thrown out in. I was told not to go amateur, because at the time amateur was punch count.
Right.
And that would confuse my logic. So they said,
yep,
go straight as a inspector, then going to the professional boxing. And that's what I did. So I don't have the amateur pedigree.
Right.
Well, mine is ABC boxing teaching.
And for our listeners out there that may not know that there's a difference between pro scoring, pro boxing scoring, and amateur boxing scoring, it's really like watching two different sports. While there are many similarities between amateur boxing and pro boxing, there are some material differences between the two sports. So what Harold's talking about is really, that an amateur judge goes through a whole series of schooling and testing, and the knowledge grows as they ascend in the ranks. And the same is true as a pro judge, but the criteria for scoring is slightly different. And we're going to get into that a little bit later here down the road. But that's just incredible that you've got over 200 plus professional fights. What is the criteria for scoring? Can you just tell the listeners give a basic overview for what the criteria is for scoring professional boxing?
Initially, there are a couple principles, and the main one is effective aggression. A lot of times you can be very aggressive in a fight. And if in fact you are aggressive, but you are not affecting your foe, it's not productive.
Right.
So the criteria is this: effective punches. Second is effective aggressiveness. The third is ring generalship. And the fourth is good defense. I'll go over the first one, effective punches. You want to land punches that affect your opponent, that cause him to be on the defensive. Mute his aggression. Effective aggressiveness. You want to be aggressive to be sure that as he moves in the ring, he's moving the way you want him to do due to your aggression. Mm-hmm. Ring generalship. If in fact he's hurt or he's tired, you're able to corner him, not let him escape. And good defense, being aggressive towards you, you're able to block the punches and stay positively aggressive toward him. Those are the criteria. Those are sometimes easy to see, sometimes not.
Right.
Some fighters are able to go backwards and control the fight. Ali was one of those.
Right.
That we recognize. Recently, you're looking at possibly Delvin Haney. He has a way of moving away and scoring. So there are so many people who can do this, you have to be able to see it. So that's where the discipline comes in. That's where the training and the study comes in, to see this. Because sitting at ringside and not knowing what you're seeing is you're sitting on an iceberg in the middle of Antarctica.
Yeah.
And you don't know what's going to happen. You're either going to drown or you're going to freeze. You have to have these life jackets securely around you. Otherwise, it's no man's land.
Right. So, and you bring up a great point that I think a lot of the listeners and fans, you know, general boxing fans that may not have a technical background or an inside view into the sport, you know, oftentimes, you know, when a fight is over, they go, oh my God, how did that fighter win that? That was not even close. What happened? Sometimes there could be some baking, but other times, and the majority of the time, it's just not understanding truly what the criteria is, right?
Yes. Another thing is each round is a fight. You have to forget the round previous. You can any action or reaction from the previous round into the next round while you're judging. Mm-hmm. It's one round, one fight at a time. If you do that, then you can get through it mentally. And at the end, you'll appreciate what you've done. You're not looking at what happened in the third round while you're watching the fourth round.
Right.
The other fighter could win that next round after losing one previously badly.
Yeah.
That's a discipline you have to have too.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You could be down eight rounds and you get to the ninth round and, you know, win the fight. So sure, you have to score each round as it comes. And that takes a great amount of concentration and a great amount of commitment to that endeavor of scoring correctly, focusing specifically on what you're watching and not, you know, not listening to the crowd, not listening to the person behind you saying, do it again, but really focusing on what you're actually seeing. So that's not an easy job. It's not as easy as people might think it is from watching on their couches, for sure.
It is not. But if you appreciate it and you see that fighter turning the corner after losing the round previously, that is when you really appreciate the craft.
Right. How does one rank or assess the effectiveness of a judge? How does that happen? What in the pro ranks, could you explain to the listeners, how is a judge ranked?
Judges, in my opinion, there are two kinds. It's going to go exactly as they are taught, as they see what they need to get out of each round to score for the particular fighter. Another judge may be in a situation where they want to continue to have opportunities. And they may sometimes be influenced by the crowds or they may not. So if you're a judge and you're confident in what you do and what you see, you're going to judge it as you see it, regardless of what anyone else says. If you're a judge who's been around a while and you like it and you love it, and you know that certain situations may not be offered to you if you go, not go a certain way, but if you're not as focused as you would be. I don't mean to sound clandestine here, but certain judges will, I don't care, this is how I see it. Certain judges will, hey, this is how I see it. But obviously you can see I was influenced. I could have been influenced by the crowd noise, or
you could have been influenced by a lot of things, Harold, right? There's a lot of, yeah. So I think, you know, for the purposes of our audience and the people listening in, I love the way you just did that because you were so ethical in your way of presenting that. And I watched you go through that whole mental process there of suggesting that, you know, there are judges that are really, really smart and focused and paying attention to the blows landed and really the criteria that's set forth by the, you know, the boxing commissions. And then you have the judges that could be there for other reasons or just kind of really not that focused in, right? Or maybe they just are not as skilled as someone who has, you know, 200 plus fights or 500 plus fights.
Yes, right. Very true.
Yeah. So, so do judges get paid? The question, I mean, this is a question I'm sure all the listeners want to know. Do judges get paid, and what are the perks of being a judge?
Well, there's no perks. You cannot go to the press conference. You do not need to know that one fighter A's mother has cancer, or fighter B's sister passed in a car wreck.
Mm-hmm.
You do not need to know any personal situations with either fighter. So therefore, some of the press conferences that are catered and the media is there, you're not able to attend. You cannot be biased, whatever. You cannot study who you are going to fight, who you are going to judge. You can't be in a situation where you're influenced by the crowd the day before or your friends about who you're going to judge or what fight's coming on. You have to be totally impartial. That is perkless. That is not a perk. A perk would be an opportunity to judge a fight, have no idea who it is, and you get it right. The right person won the fight. Of course, you're going to be taken care of somewhat. You may sometimes get a room. You may get a flight. You may get a per diem for food, or you may not.
Right.
You may get on your own dime. You may get your own hotel room. You just want, you will be paid to do the job, but sometimes you don't get all those things. And if you're there for that, you're not there for the actual sport.
Right.
Now, boxing is the only one where the promoter pays you.
Okay. You opened that up.
Football is not that.
You opened up that can of worms. I said you opened up that can of worms, so let's get into that.
So, therefore, you always can be subservient to the promoter.
Mm.
And that is, the boxing has its own way of doing things. So, if you can migrate, if you can navigate that, and understand that and stay neutral, you can be okay. But as far as perks is concerned, you can't go back in the back when the fighters are getting ready. You can't go to the fighters meetings. You can't, certain things you cannot do. You have to stay sterile. So, but the main perk is you're sitting at that ring. You are affecting someone's livelihood. They count on you to put food on their table for their kids, for themselves, for their parents.
Right.
They have opportunity to live out something that they want to do, and you have opportunity to fairly help them achieve that goal, knowing that you did your best and you concentrated. And most of all, just the fact that some humans are talented mentally and physically to do this. And it's not brutal. It's, to me, it's Picasso. It's a painting. It's when you paint a painting, you have to put certain colors on first and second and third, and then it comes out to be the painting. And that's how a fight is, round by round by round. It's building up. It's building up.
Right.
Just to give an example, a fighter may faint 3 or 4 times in a round, but the other fighter doesn't react. And he's just watching. How many times are you going to faint? Maybe you'll be there so I can score you, maybe not. As you go along, those feints are the blue color putting on the canvas. Eventually, that feint is going to work. He's not going to hit me, so I'm going to be aggressive. At that time, that's when the other person is able to score. There's so many nuances that build up in boxing that round by round by round that comes to a culmination. I enjoy that part more than anything because
it's
a thinking man's sport. It is physical, yet you have to outthink the fighter.
Yeah, and the level most people have limited knowledge on the level of intellect that's required to be a fighter and how cerebral it truly is. You know, yes, it's marrying the physical nature of your body, but the real work is the mental work that's done, and the three qualities that a fighter needs to possess, right, is a physical power, you know, physical presence, spiritual presence, and really an intellectual level. And if those three pieces are in place, you're going to be in good, you're going to be in good hands there.
Yes.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, can I ask you, since this is the boxing breakdown, right?
Yes.
I really wanted to get into and talk to you a little bit about the potential matchup. Well, it's supposedly scheduled, the scheduled matchup, but you never know what's going to happen with everything that's going on in the world today, between Teofimo Lopez and Vasily Lomachenko. So I'd love for you to tell the listeners, and really let's just work together here to play devil's advocate, and we'll chop up Teofimo Lopez, and let's just talk a little bit about his attributes and who he is as a fighter.
Okay. Number one that stood out to me is he's a counterpuncher unless he hurts you. If he has advantage, then he'll attack. Initially, he's going to try to get in a position where he can counterpunch you, change your aggression, then he'll come after you. His flaw is his left hand is down. He's trying to do the Floyd Mayweather shoulder roll. Mm. It's not natural for him.
Mm-hmm.
As any fighter will that I've seen, and I'm sure you know this also, you can be trained to do a certain thing over and over again. But when you're in a firefight, you resort to the very first thing you were ever taught. And the very first thing that he was taught was not the shoulder roll. Floyd Mayweather, first thing he was taught was the shoulder roll, and he automatically goes to it whether he's hurt or not.
Right.
Lopez doesn't have that. I've watched some of his fights. If he's hit, that left hand is down.
Right. Yeah.
But he has power and the youth.
Right. And actually, Teofimo is from my hometown. He's El Brooklyn. He's from Brooklyn, New York. And certainly a deceptive fighter. I mean, when you watch the breakdown of his fights, you can certainly see how he puts an end to his opponents relatively quickly. He's got power in both hands. The straight left hand is dangerous. That straight left hand, he has taken a lot of people out, but a lot, you know, what he doesn't get credit for as much, well, maybe he does, but certainly people don't talk as much about that left hook, which you just mentioned, which was dropped down. The left hook is carried a little low, and it comes up almost like a 45 at times. And he really puts a lot of different angles on that left hook. He throws it from the outside. He throws it from the inside. And he's got a lot of different ways to spin that left hook, which makes it a very, very dangerous punch. Specifically, you know, for a southpaw. You know, if it's coming with a straight left hand, those two combinations together, the power in the left and the power with the straight right hand, is a really effective combination to have power like that.
I agree. Something else he does well, he keeps his foot on the outside. He continues to keep his advantage by, no matter what, he'll stay on the outside. Now, I have seen him be cocky and walk into the fire, as in he'll walk towards the right hand knowing that his opponent cannot hit him. And that is an attribute also that he has.
Right. Yeah, he's certainly not afraid to trade. He trades with the best of them. He's in the, you know, I was watching, what do you think about his ability to fight at distance? Because it seems to me that that he's most effective right at distance, like right in the place where a lot of people get knocked out, you know, right in the middle zone there. He always, you know, it seems like he's there. You know, he's fighting there. He's fighting off there. He's fighting off his hands. He's pulling back. He's doing a lot of things at that range, which I think is pretty incredible and really says a lot about his gumption. You know, he's got a lot of cojones to be in that spot.
Yeah, when he's in the pocket, he's effective. Once he gets there, I've seen him, as boxers do, in my opinion, I've seen that first exchange where you're going to hit me, I'm going at you, this is our first exchange. What happens after that? Do we stay in the pocket? Do I stay out of the pocket? Mm. Am I going to get knocked down? Am I going to get hurt? Am I going to hurt you? Are you going to hurt me? When that moment comes with Lopez, he usually comes out on top. He's the one that hurts them during that exchange. Right. He'll take a punch, but he'll throw that punch. Once the pocket is established between the two fighters, he usually comes out on top of that.
Yeah.
He's this great counter puncher. He's mm-hmm. looking for that. I'll take that punch, but can you take mine?
That's a great point. And you know, you saw that in his fight, the fight that he had in December at Madison Square Garden against Richard Comey. He did exactly what you're talking about, which is, you know, he stayed right at distance. You know, Comey, you know, dropped in a couple of times, you know, kind of jumped in. I think he did it like 2-3, maybe even 4 times. He dropped into the pocket and Teofimo was watching. You could see him. He saw the shot. He saw it. And I think he'd have to speak to what he saw specifically. But the way that I saw it from what I was looking at was he just allowed him to do that several times. And then eventually just landed that straight right hand. Right when he made the mistake.
Came first. And then the right hand. Mm. So, but that was all because they made that agreement. Let's step in the pocket now.
Mano y mano, right? Like who's gonna get it done?
I've had fighters tell me they know if they're gonna win or lose upon that moment.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense because when you feel somebody's power, you trade and you exchange and you get the worst of the exchange. You know, it does change your fight plan. You know, so your coach is saying do this and you're like, I was just there. I'm not 100% sure that's the right move. So you could see that, you know, I mean, a lot of his fighters that Tio faces, you know, don't get to spend too much time in the ring with him.
Now, the Japanese fighter he fought, who took him the distance, who had the length and the height on him, mm-hmm. he was able to withstand that, and he landed more punches in the fight than Lopez did. However, Lopez was more effective, but that was the time where he was in the pocket, landed the punches he wanted to land, and they were somewhat ineffective.
Right.
At that point, I realized that Lopez had to do something else to be successful. And he was able to do that.
Right.
The Japanese fighter had a great jab, good right hand, but he was just too relentless, left too many holes, and Lopez was able to score. As a judge in that fight, he couldn't be overwhelmed by the frequency of the Japanese blows.
Right.
He threw a lot of punches, but he lost the rounds because he was not effective, even though he was aggressive and he was throwing a lot of punches, a la Mayweather and Oscar De La Hoya.
Right.
Like Oscar was winning, he was not, a lot of punches. He was being scored on by Floyd, and Floyd was able to win some of those rounds. So I like the way Lopez had to adjust in that fight.
Right. And you're talking, the Japanese fighter that you're speaking of is Masayoshi. Let me see. Masayoshi Nakatani, right? That's who you're talking about. It's hard for me to say that name, but that's who you're talking about, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Just wanted to make sure for the listeners out there, he's talking about Masayoshi Nakatina. Nakatani. There it is.
Nakatani.
Yeah. So, yeah, but okay. So, we've talked a little bit about Tio and Teofimo Lopez, El Brooklyn, and let's switch gears a little and, let's break down a Vasily Lomachenko, who, by the way, Lomachenko, is from the Ukraine and he's Ukrainian. He's, I think he's 32 years old, right?
Yes.
Yeah, he's 32 years old. And then you've got Teofimo Lopez is 22 years old. They've got a 10-year differential in age. And one of them, I think Teofimo he's going up. And after this fight, he's going up in weight. I think he's going to 140. And then I think Vasily Lomachenko is actually going down in weight to 130, which means like this fight, like if it didn't happen now, it would never happen, Harold. Like, so, you know, I'm so excited to see the fight. And I think it will be the last time you see those two match each other unless, you know, the worlds collide or something. But they're both going in opposite directions. And Vasily Lomachenko, let's break him down. Let's talk about him.
Well, what comes to mind with me is when he's in the pocket, he always gets off first. He doesn't give his opponent an opportunity to start. He's always first. If he's first in the pocket, when the opponent retaliates, he can either block or get out of the pocket. That is something that he's always done. He's always done well. He goes into that pocket protected, as in his guard is up. He's in there first. He gets off first, and he gets out first. Right. That is something that he's done to take care to protect himself, as because he's usually the smaller man, and this is how he can go in there with his arm on and get out.
Right. Right. And, you know, just to stop you there for a second, just to reiterate that Teofimo Lopez, his record, I think at the present moment is like 15-0 with 12 KOs, right? So he's got like an 80% KO ratio and he's ranked number 2 in the world. And, Vasily Lomachenko is 14-1 loss with 10 KOs, and he's ranked number 1 in the world. And I think that says a lot. You got number 1 and number 2 at that weight division coming head to head. So I just wanted to point that out for the listeners so they know what we're talking about, apples to apples here. And his only loss, the only loss that Vasily Lomachenko has had is against Orlando Salido. And that was back in 2014. That's his only loss. And that was at 125.
Yes. And there was a reason for that loss. It was very clear. Lomachenko had just come from the amateurs. And in amateurs, the referees are a lot more active. In amateurs, there's certain things you cannot do. The mauling, the elbows across the face, the back pushes, the pelvis turns, the elbows to the side. Certain things you can't do in the amateurs.
Right.
When he fought Solis had all these pro tricks in his bag. He knew exactly how to administer these things. As a pro, you learn how to avoid those things. Lomachenko had no idea how to move and get away and not let those things happen to him.
Right.
Solis was able to be on the certain side of the referee. The referee didn't see some of these things. And Lomachenko did not know how to handle that pro type of style at the time. That loss was strictly a situation where he was he did not know how pros fought.
Right, right. Yeah, and actually at the time, Solito probably had 40 or 50 fights at the time. So he's coming in. I mean, he's stepping up to fight a seasoned veteran at the time.
That is a long don't. I won't hang on him.
Yeah.
I don't think Alvarez has lost to Mayweather on him either.
Right. Right. That was an incredible learning experience for Canelo at that time, as young as he was in his career, to be able to face Floyd Mayweather. That really speaks a lot to his experience level at this point in his career. That fight.
And
that
Lomo.
Fight.
Lomo learned a lot from that loss.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Significant. So, let's talk about the comparison between the two. Let's break down Vasily Lomachenko against Teofimo Lopez when they meet. How do you think that's going to go?
My first thought is how Lomachenko mutes your offense. When you're charging him or being aggressive, he has this solar plex punch, where he'll punch you directly in the solar plex, right in the middle of your stomach.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
You from being aggressive. Now, Lopez has a tendency to come in hard. He's going to come. If he thinks he hurts you, he's coming.
Oh, yeah.
And he's going to throw that looping right hand, that left hand that you spoke of earlier. Lomo has a way of muting that by stopping you in your tracks with that punch. I've seen him do it countless times when he's being attacked. That is something that I see is going to be really monumental. When Lopez attacks, will he be able to sustain it, or will he be muted? And that's what I see here.
Interesting. Do you think that Teofimo's counterpunching ability and his timing, along with his sheer punch power in both hands, is going to play a role in that when that happens?
I see Lomachenko, he covers up so well. Naturally, his hands are always up. Whenever he throws a punch, his hands come back to the position. Whenever he turns, his hands come back to the position. You're not going to catch him with an overhand right. You're not going to catch him with a wild looping left. You're not going to catch him with something straight down the pike because you step over to the left or the right. He just has, at this point in his career, his defense is very well situated where he naturally does things. Lopez comes with all of that. When Lopez had Kamaji on the ropes and he was on his way to knock him out, he didn't land anything, just one punch. But he was landing so many punches, the referee was forced to come in. But the punches were all on the gloves. Kamaji had his hands up. There was no clean punches on his head at all. Just one other after he retreated to the ropes. Lomachenko will block all of that, and he'll be able to retaliate if that happens.
Right.
So I was looking for Lopez to go to the body to bring his hands down. He did not. I was looking for him to do uppercut. He did not. He simply swarmed him in that manner. You can't do that with a fighter who has the pedigree of Lomachenko.
Right, right. And well, I mean, and on the flip side, just playing devil's advocate here, you've got Teofimo, who you know, does damage when he lands shots. I mean, serious damage on every punch. It's bad intentions everywhere. And if you go back and you look at Lomachenko's fights and you see the fight, like, for example, he fought Pedraza, he fought Campbell and Linares, and in all those fights, man, they were tough fights. And you know, I'm just wondering, I'm just wondering if Teofimo cracks Lomachenko for, say, 8 rounds, 10 rounds, what's his face going to look like? What's he going to look like at the end of that?
If he can land clean punches, yes, he can take him out. Yeah. I think power is pulverizing. I really think that if he can land something. However, as you know, from all your training and what you've done, if you land a punch early, you'll look for that punch the whole fight.
Good point there, hon. That's a good point, Harold.
And it throws you off your game plan. It throws you off of what you need to do. And the advantage is to that fighter. Lopez being young and headstrong and not versed in boxing, in my opinion, in this situation, if he lands anything early, he's going to be hunting. And he could easily lose on points because of that.
Right.
But if he lands it clean enough, anyone will go. Anyone is not going to make them count. He's not going to make the count.
Right.
So right now, I just see Lopez has a great opportunity. I think it's more than a puncher's chance. If, in fact, he doesn't get an opportunity to, you know, utilize the puncher's chance.
Right.
He may have a little difficult winning the fight against Lomachenko.
And that's a good point that you bring up there, because if you go back and you actually look at Lomachenko's, you know, go look at his highlight reels or just go take a look at what he's done in his career, you know, you see guys like, you know, Nicholas Walters, you see great fighters that he's faced. I mean, I could just go down the list of all the great fighters that Loma has fought. And, you know, he's they call him the Matrix. I think that's high tech, the Matrix, whatever. He's got a couple of names here, but I mean, look at his resume: Orlando Salido, Gary Russell Jr., Roman Martinez, Nicholas Walters, Jason Sosa, Guillermo Rigondeaux, I mean, Jorge Linares, yeah. Jose Pedraza. I mean, he's fought the likes of some really talented fighters.
The Gary Russell fight was cerebral. And Gary Russell could not do anything with that style at all. He was always on his back foot, and that is so uncharacteristic of Gary Russell Jr.
Yeah, I mean, you look at that fight, and he looks like he's being hit by a ghost. Like he's just there and covering up, and shots are coming in from every angle, high, low, inside out, outside in, they're everywhere. And the same, I mean, if you go, it's almost like you could turn on any Loma fight, and you could actually see the same exact posture of his opponent. They're all kind of like fighting the air, and there's nothing there. And I think that's really material in this matchup. It's really, you know, that's a scary place to be when you're not sure where the punches are coming from.
Yes. He is a bigger man though, right?
Yeah.
He is a bigger man.
Yeah, he sure is.
If he could impose his size on Lomachenko, that can be an advantage.
For sure. For sure. And that's what, you know, that's what makes this fight so intriguing. And, you know, with all due respect for Lomachenko, like big props. And we can talk about, you know, his dance experience and his father put him in Ukrainian dance lessons and all kinds of dance lessons when he was younger. And I can tell you, being a dancer myself and spending many, many years doing that, that advantage is incredible, because something that you won't hear many commentators even talking about or podcasts discussing is that one of the advantages that he has, and quite possibly current, you know, right now, you know, Joe Rogan, you know, the best boxer ever that ever lived, Bob Arum, Loma you know, is the greatest of all time. You know, I mean, come on. You know, these guys, I've seen everybody, right? So what he's got is he's got the ability to see what's happening before it happens, like far before it's happening. So it's almost like he's in front of, he's in the future, you know, he's in the future. Before it happens, he knows what's happening. He can tell with the body movements. He can see the body positioning and the angles of where the fighter, where the body weight is. And he knows exactly where to shift his weight. And that's dance training. You know, that's, you know, having a very, the ability to control your body and have that really, really, that neurology, that very, very fine motor skill is attributed to his early training, you know, because that early study of dance really locks into the neurology and translates into anything you do. So have you ever heard anybody say that?
Yes. I mean, I never have. And coupled with good defense, coupled with the defense, like you said, he's able to move, shift, get around, move, and he's got the defense. So he's going to get out of the way with his legs and his movement, and he will be protected as he's doing so. Right. So that is a beautiful package he has there.
Right. So, okay, real quick. Harold, who do you got? Who do you got in the fight? Who are you going with?
Well, obviously my commentary here has been kind of biased only because I see Lopez has a few holes that Lomachenko may be able to exploit. Okay. So I'm liking Lomachenko on points. Mm. I don't think he has the power to knock him out, but I believe he'll win on points, and we'll see 3 or 4 rounds of frustration from Mr. Lopez, as in he won't be able to hit him. He's going to try to bully him. There may be some fouls going on, a lot of breaking up of the fighters, because Lopez is not going to be able to find him after maybe 5 or 6 rounds. So I'm going with Lomachenko on points.
Got it. I got that. And I'd be interested to hear, you know, from the listeners, you know, who they think, you know, is going to win that fight. But I'll tell you what, they haven't decided. I don't believe at the time of this recording, they've actually decided whether the fight is going to be shown on ESPN or whether it's a pay-per-view or not. I don't think they've made that decision yet. And I think they're hoping that they're going to have a crowd for the fight, that if they postpone, the fight is scheduled for September, by the way, folks. And if they're going to have the fight in September, is there going to be a crowd? Is there not going to be a crowd? How many spectators will be in the room? That's yet to be determined, but the fight is going down and it is exciting. And I wish these two men, and both of them are outstanding people. And you know, I just wish them all the luck and success in their endeavor and the competition that's in front of them, because it's going to be a fight to watch for sure. And Harold, you know, I just wanted to thank you so much for being on the Boxing Breakdown today and being with me and spending your time on this beautiful day to kind of just chop up some boxing. And it has been a pleasure for me to be with you, man.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right, man. So with that, I just want to tell everybody that I wish you peace and love. And until the next time on the Boxing Breakdown, take care and be well.
Fight fans, join host Mark Roxy and special guests as they break down all aspects of the boxing world, including news, business, management, training, promotions, fan reactions, upcoming events, matchups, future boxing stars, title fights, state of the boxing world, and all the stuff you don't see when you watch boxing. This podcast is released each week on Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Live streamed on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook Live. It's the Boxing Breakdown, hosted by Mark Roxie.